On this episode of Binged, Kate. Meticulous and preternaturally skilled, Kate is a perfect specimen of a finely tuned assassin at the height of her game. But when she uncharacteristically blows an assignment targeting a member of the Yakuza in Tokyo, she quickly discovers she's been poisoned. A brutally slow execution that gives her less than 24 hours to exact revenge on her killers. As her body swiftly deteriorates, Kate forms an unlikely bond with the teenage daughter of one of her past victims. Starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Miku Martinu, and Woody Harrelson, and directed by Cedric Nicholas Troyan, Kate follows a burned assassin's furious pursuit of one last self-appointed job.
Okay, I thought Kate was pretty good. I thought that Kate had a lot of good action scenes in it. I thought that the writing was pretty good. The story was good enough. I thought that, you know, ultimately where it got us was good enough. And I think that if you were going to watch this movie, you would enjoy it.
I concur completely. I think you hit it perfect there. The action sequences were the highlight of the film. They're well done and like super brutal in some parts. Like the stylization as a whole of the film was the highlight for me. And then the story, like you said, was a neatly wrapped story with like a few twists and turns, but nothing groundbreaking. I'm going to give it a kernel ranking. Good, not great, nothing special. But if you needed something to watch, it'd be okay.
What? Kernel? Really? I'm going popped right off the bat. I thought it was another movie that we decided to watch that otherwise I wouldn't have chosen to pick up on Netflix. And I think I'm giving it a pop just because of like the few little funny phrases that I picked up during it. I won't get into it until we get after the spoilers, but I thought there were some funny things. And I just think that Kate is a total badass. I think she was so cool. A great action hero or a great assassin. And yeah, I think it was a pop movie.
I think I would give it a kernel rating as well. I think that it was a good action movie, and it's one of those movies that I could see being on TV a lot. And, you know, you're flipping through the channels and you see it and you would watch it. So I think that's honestly probably like the best rating that you can give one of these type of movies. It's just that it's rewatched.
Spoilers ahead. Stop now and watch this episode's featured Netflix original.
Kate begins. We're thrust into this active assassination mission. We meet our main characters, Kate, who is played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and her partner in some way that we don't know yet, Woody Harrelson, whose name is Varric, nicknamed DeV throughout the movie. And so we see the scene with Kate. She's getting ready to eliminate the target. She's got like the voice in her head telling her to go take the shot, but she hesitates because there's this child with the target, so she has like a moral conflict there, but she ultimately complies with the voice over the radio, tells her to complete the mission. She takes the shot and kills the target. Starting scene, what'd you guys think?
Super tense. I had no idea where I was, what was going on. We're in a vanilla box truck or box truck that says vanilla on it, and we're in the middle of nowhere, and I kind of had to stop after the first, but that first whole scene was maybe 10 minutes. I had to stop and think, oh my God, what am I watching right now? I have no idea. She's about to shoot someone, and I don't know anything except there are a few Japanese men coming out of a car. A little confused, but it sorts itself out after that.
Yeah, I thought this was a great introduction to Kate as a whole. We see her combat skills at the beginning when she takes out a couple guards, and then we hear her bragging about how she's never missed a shot. And I think it did set up a little bit, Greg, that it was definitely not their first rodeo. They had been doing this a while. You could tell just the way the conversation was going between V and Kate in the van. And I think it exposes us early to Kate's inner turmoil as a character, where she's carrying out this mission almost as if she's a programmed weapon, and she's just fulfilling her job. And we see after this scene how it starts to take a little bit more of a mental toll on her.
Right. We started the movie, hit the ground running, and it gave us some themes that were going to show up throughout the movie. So I like the beginning. All right. So 10 months later, we flash forward, and Kate is still kind of thinking about that situation with the child. She hasn't recovered, and she's considering retirement. So she talks to Varric and tells him that she might be done with this whole assassination business. Then we cut to another scene where she meets this guy in a bar.
One funny note there in her conversation. There were only a few times that I laughed during the whole movie. But when V said, two trips to Walmart and you'll be back, I chuckled.
And then, so while she's with this guy that she met in the bar, she gets a text on her phone about another mission, codenamed The Last Dance. So this was going to be her last mission. And she gets to the roof where she's about to shoot the target, and she has like a, she misses the shot. She says she never misses in the last scene, and so she misses the shot, which was like crazy for her. And it's because she had like, there was kind of like an editing thing where you saw that she had like a headache or something like that. Something caused her to miss the shot. But then she gets away. She steals a car that ultimately crashes.
Yeah, you guys touched on this in the beginning. When she stole the car at the end of that scene after she misses the shot, that was one of the best scenes in the whole movie. When the neon lights are going, the Japanese hip-hop is firing, and she's weaving in and out of traffic. That seriously, it sounds crazy, but just that whole three-minute segment was really one of the best parts of the movie. I thought, holy crap, I kind of want to go to Japan.
This was no, like, I agree. That's what, when I say like the stylization of the film, how I like that, that's what I was talking about. That scene in particular was really cool. It was like heavy CGI, but it kind of fit the movie. And that was a cool scene.
Yeah, I thought this chunk of the movie, really a lot happened in a quick period of time. We see at the start of this section, we see Kate sees a girl with a family, and that's what kind of gets the ball rolling in her head that she's ready to retire, and then has the conversation, and then that's when we find out, you know, it's kind of the action movie trope of, well, we have one more mission to finish off. And as we see in most other movies, it's always a little more complex than just one last final thing. And the little bit of breakdown she starts to have after the when she's going for that last shot and misses, when she has the blackout, I mean, we see that it's taking a toll on her physically as well. She starts to vomit when she gets down from the roof before she goes to get into the car. So she clearly knows that something is starting to go wrong, and she's not quite sure what it is. And then, of course, at the end of the chase, she has another one of those little blackouts, and that's what causes eventually the accident. And that's when we cut to the next scene.
Yeah, so in between the car crash and when she'll wake up in the hospital, we have this flashback showing Kate with Varick as a child. So it gives us some insight into their relationship, how he's known her from a young age, and we'll learn more about that throughout the film. So she wakes up in the hospital, and she learns that she has radiation poisoning, which is what's causing her to miss the shot and to crash the car. And so she escapes from the hospital, and she's determined to figure out who poisoned her, and the most obvious candidate was the guy that she met in the bar. So she shows up to his house and interrogates him, considers killing him and his wife, and learns that it's the Kojima clan that sent him to poison her.
Yeah, so with this, that moment of her breaking out of the hospital was just crazy. It just goes to show how quick-thinking she is and able to react to her situations, and like it really just, it's all starting to pile up how much of a actually well-trained fighter, assassin, weapon of mass destruction she really is single-handedly. And she swipes a gun from a police officer that's looking for her, doesn't even notice that the gun's gone. Then she kidnaps a doctor, goes into the medicine cabinet, gets what she needs so that she can break out of the hospital, still have enough medicine to keep her going throughout the day, because we find out she only has 24 hours to live.
Yeah, the medicine that she, whatever it is, like epinephrine or whatever it is she finds, will kind of keep coming up throughout the movie too. And I, like you're saying, the action scenes, like, they're very clever and just well shot. Escaping the hospital was really cool.
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge issue, but one issue that I did have was when she's on the doctor's table and the doctor's explaining what happened to her, I kind of got a little bit of a cringe moment where you feel like Kate is a little bit too pre-programmed, if that makes sense. So the doctor says that she has, what was her diagnosis? Some lethal poisoning, right? And she goes off and gives like the medical definition of what it is. And then she starts saying, oh, was it this? Was it this? Was it this? Was it polonium-210? No, it was polonium-204. And I just kind of felt like, oh, okay, like she's an assassin. We get it. She's super smart. I don't know why that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I'll have to think about that a little bit more. But
it was too in your face, maybe. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't leave the viewer to like think for themselves.
It was, yeah. And it just made me feel like we get the point. She's a stone cold killer and she's super smart. But what? Maybe it's a weird reason that it's bothering me. But
no, yeah. I get it. They really wanted to make sure that you knew like she was this crazy assassin. And they weren't going to let you forget it.
Exactly.
I'm with you a little bit on that scene too, Greg, just because I think that her reaction to finding out she only had 24 hours to live was just way too casual. She had just been talking about wanting to retire and get out of the lifestyle that she was living so that she could have a family. And then a short time after that, she finds out she only has 24 hours to live. And it's like immediately a switch goes off where all of her emotion gets completely cut out and she gets turned into this killer again. And I just, I think I had wished that there was a little bit more of emotion in that scene and less of just like that pre-programmed robot that you were talking about.
So in our next scene, she meets up with Varric, gets some information from him that the people associated with the Kijima clan, some of them hang out at this place called the Black Lizard. So she shows up there, confronts the man named Sato, who she learns that name from the guy in the bar. She's trying to find Kijima, who's the leader of the Kijima clan. And so she kills everyone. Another pretty cool action scene. Very brutal in this scene. Like, I was whoa, I would not expect
it
this.
It really, like, turned it up to 10 in this.
Oh, yeah. And so so she kills everybody except one last dude. And he tells her, gives her another lead that Annie is the niece of Kijima, and she's the one that's going to be able to tell her where he is. And so we'll keep going here. Kate finds Annie at this concert. She's the same girl who was at the beginning of the movie, the child who she shot the father of. And so she kidnaps her and is able to get in contact with Renji, who is Kojima's top advisor, and tells him to meet her at some place or that Annie's going to die.
Yeah, so I thought this part was pretty good as well. I thought that the moment that she realized that Annie was the girl from before was really well done, because there was a little bit of like a flashback of showing her crying over her dead father. And then it just shows Kate kind of giving her, really, it's kind of like a weird look of pity from her, which, as we just talked about, she didn't show much emotion. And then she immediately snaps back into killer mode and grabs her and pulls her away from the crowd, and they go down a couple dark alleys, and that's where they eventually go to a bathroom where Kate ends up storing her. But I thought this part was pretty important, because the is this the first time that we know that she can speak Japanese? When Annie's on the phone?
I know at some point she seems to be like pretending that she doesn't speak Japanese, but I think, I don't know. I thought the first time would be later in the movie, but you might be right.
The only reason I bring this up is because there had been a couple times where we did see Japanese subtitles, and I know we touched on that kind of that topic on the last review we did for Beckett. So I think in this sense, it does make a lot of sense that we see the Japanese subtitles here, because the main character who they're telling the story through is able to understand Japanese, so that just kind of made more sense and jumped out to me.
So I had two thoughts from this little stretch. Going back to Big's original thought, Big, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you said that there was a connection between Annie and Kate where they sort of look at each other, right? Did you mention that?
Yeah.
So for me, I thought, oh, like, boom, bang, here we go. Pause the movie. Kate is going to fall in love with Annie. This is going to be her end. Like, because Kate says to V that she wants to start a family. And I thought, oh man, like, these two are going to have a great connection. I'm going to start crying. Like, this is it right here. So that's where my mind was going. I thought the movie was going to head in that direction. So I kind of had that in the back of my head throughout the rest of the movie.
You've been watching too many Netflix movies. I was thinking a nice mother-daughter relationship. Definitely. I don't know.
Yeah, no, sorry. I didn't think love. I thought the same thing that you thought.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure. Yeah, I was yeah.
No, sorry. Not a love affair, but yes, a mother-daughter love.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. They were setting that up for the rest of the movie. You could kind of see it coming. You knew it was going to be good.
Yeah. And then the only other thought that I had was the first time that we see Annie when she's in the nightclub, that Japanese punk rock. Holy shit, that slaps. That song is awesome.
Yeah, I like the soundtrack of the film.
I thought it was really good.
I think we could definitely get more into the K-pop sound, maybe. We'll have to look into that.
It's going to be all over my Spotify. Carry on.
All right, so at this point, Kate is looking very sickly. The radiation poisoning is really setting in. And this is where we start to see more of that relationship start forming between Annie and Kate. And so the meeting time comes where Renji is supposed to show up. Kate hides Annie in a bathroom. But Kojima, so they're at the little restaurant where she orders the chickens. And Kojima is not there at the meeting. So Kate she's not into that. So she escapes, fights another batchel of dudes, takes them all out, no problem. But Annie gets out of the bathroom and Shinzo is there. And it turns out that he wants Annie dead too. And so Kate flips it around, saves Annie, and they kind of go on their way together after some arguing about where Annie's going to go. And we'll keep going. So Annie tells Kate where to find Renji, which is at his penthouse. So we go to the penthouse with the two of them. She interrogates his boyfriend that's there, and they fight. And Annie is the one who ultimately shoots the boyfriend to help Kate survive. And so they use the boyfriend's phone that's there to track down Renji and figure out where Kojima's going to be.
Yeah, I had two quick thoughts, and I'll pick up where you left off there, Eric. So like you said, Annie is kind of the one at the end of that whole stretch that you just described that she's able to put the next wheel into motion in the plan. And it goes back to one thing that she says earlier to Kate when they're waiting. They just like order dinner. They're sitting there at a picnic table, and Annie's trying to convince Kate why she should keep her around. And Kate said, this was a funny quote, I thought, "I'm really good at shortcuts and maps." So I thought that was a quick little foreshadow. Like, she actually is pretty damn good at maps. She was able to track down where the Kojima clan is going to be. And then one thing that Shinzo says to Annie before he gets killed off by Kate is that Annie is a quote half race. So it sounded like a half Japanese. So that kind of started to set up the idea that maybe the family didn't want Annie in the picture anymore.
Got to pick up on that, but that's a good find.
Yeah. So this part of the movie really started to set up like almost the secondary conflict in this movie. We have the main being Kate going after the people that poisoned her. And now we see a second conflict arise where members within the Kojima gang are trying to take out Annie. And there's this weird moment at a meeting before the goons get sent out to go find her with Renji, where he kind of has this conversation where it's like, you know, she's the last one of the remaining family. And they kind of have this weird moment. So that jumped out to me at the time, and that kind of started to put it in my head, like, oh, wait a minute. So, like, what is going on here? And I think this is also the time where Annie reveals to Kate that she's under the impression that there's members in the gang that are trying to go behind the family's back to take out the family. I think she had mentioned that the family gang is the one that killed her father, and that's kind of the impression that she's at this point. Of course, not knowing that Kate is the one that assassinated her at the beginning of the film. So this really lays the foundation for the next half of the movie and the story of where I think both of these kind of come to a collision.
Right, and I think it came right at the right time where it's been a while where Kate was just kind of following this lead, trying to figure out who poisoned her, and then we get some more information about this whole situation with the Kojima clan that made it a little more interesting, kind of propelled the story forward to the end here. So now we're in the taxi with Kate and Annie, and they're having a heart-to-heart moment. They kind of discuss both being orphaned as children, basically. They're similar in a lot of ways. And so we arrive at the Kojima household, the family house, and Kate enters the home and finds Kojima sitting there. It kind of seemed like he was waiting there for her. He seemed like a very like all-knowing type dude who he was waiting for. And so we learn that Renji is the one that put out the hit on Annie's father, the hit that Kate carried out, and that Kate was poisoned by, well, Renji and V, who is aligned with Renji at this point, we'll kind of come to learn, and not Kojima. So she's been searching for this dude the whole movie, and turns out they're almost on the same side. And so, and then outside, we see V pulls up to find Annie sitting outside the family house. And V reveals to Annie that Kate is the one who shot her father. So now everybody knows this to be the truth. And so we're still outside, the camera's outside, and we hear a gunshot from the inside. We assume it's Kate doing what she came to do and killing Kojima. She comes back outside, and Annie actually shoots Kate and goes with V. And then, you know, twist, she didn't shoot Kojima. It was a fake. and so Kojima comes out with one of those epi shots of epinephrine and hits Kate one more time. She's got just enough energy to go finish this movie. So they get in the car and we'll see what happens at the end. What'd you guys think of this part?
Yeah, so this is really where both of these worlds collide. Kate shows up to fill out what she had set out to do, and Kojima, being the very all-knowing mob boss that he is, really lays out the entire ploy in front of her. There were people within his gang that were trying to take the family out so that they could take over. So they hired the hit on the brother, and they were going to go after Kojima next. While this is all going on, we find out that V was working with Renji to follow through with taking out the entire family. So now he shows up at this time. I was confused. Like, did he know that Kate was going to be there, or was he going to take out either Kojima or Annie at that point? That's what was a little confusing to me at this time.
I guess that's possible. I don't know. Were they trying to kill Kojima? It seems like they're trying to like usurp power without, I don't know, maybe they felt like they couldn't kill him for some, I don't know. I don't know how he ended up showing up there. I know he was like aligned with Renji, so maybe he had some information that they went to his household and that were headed there. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's
because Kate called him and said, you know, I know where he is. He's up in the hills. I'm going to go get him.
You're right. She did.
He was trying to stop that interaction from happening. So I think that's why he showed up when he did. And then he shows up with Annie, who at this point, he knows that Kate's inside, and he thinks that this is probably going to be the last living member of the family. So he kind of kidnaps her low-key by just like tricking her to come with him. And I think that was really his chess playing at the end there.
I had a question. Kojima takes an envelope out and shows something to Kate. What was that? I assume it was some information about Varric and how Kate and Varric probably aren't as connected as she had originally thought. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, so we don't actually see the photos, I don't believe, but presumably it's the evidence that Varric was working with Renji to carry out this whole plan of killing the brother, then taking care of Kate with the poison. So that's why she kind of realizes that Varric is double-crossing her as well. So it's kind of both. It's odd that Kate and Kojima both end up in the same situation where they're being double-crossed by what they presume to be family. So that's kind of what that kind of symbolized, Greg. I don't think we saw the actual evidence, but I think everything was laid out there that's what it had to be.
Right. It does kind of draw like a nice parallel between the two. They're both in the same situation, like you said, which is kind of like it's kind of contrasting to what you would expect when Kate showed up there, what she expected when she showed up there to like kill Kojima, but she finds out that they're both getting screwed over by these two dudes. Do we want to mention the attack on white people?
No.
Wait, what? I don't even.
Greg, I don't know if you looked up any reviews for this movie.
Oh, I did. Never mind the reviews. I don't. Who cares about reviews? Well, go ahead.
This movie is very problematic.
Among the
liberal world.
It's problematic amongst the liberals. What do they have to say about it?
Of that, it's very pro Asian violence. That it's just white imperialism going into another country and taking out a bunch of Asians that we're not supposed to feel for. We're supposed to be happy that they're all dying.
That's what they took away. That's what they said in the review. Wait.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's craziness.
Two or three different reviews. Eric has a bone to pick with the blatant anti-white message throughout the movie.
No, it wasn't throughout the movie, and that was the problem. Like, if you're gonna make a movie, you know, about whatever Western culture overtake, I get that, because like Japan has a very like rich historical like traditional culture, so that's fine. I get wanting to like preserve that, but if you're making a movie about, you know, some action movie that doesn't have anything to say about that throughout the whole movie until this one point in the end, and they're just trying to like throw in some sort of moral message at the end saying that white culture is trying to take over Japan, it didn't make sense in the context of the film. That's the only problem I had with it. I think if if the whole movie was kind of alluding to that and it has something interesting to say, that's fine. But it seemed out of place to me. That was my only problem with it.
Wait, what scene did that even come in? I don't even...
When Kojima and Kate are talking, he tells her that the reason this is all happening, why Renji is turning his back on him, is because Western culture is pervasive. But, I mean, that's fine if that's going to be the message of the movie. I'm just saying my take was that it didn't really make sense when the whole movie was not about that. It was an action movie. All right, so let's get to the end of the movie here. So this revenge tour, Kate and her dying breasts here, teams up with Kojima and this whole SWAT team. They enter the building that Renji and V are holed up in, and they have Annie with them too. And so they go in there, shoot everybody. Kate's doing some more crazy stuff. Kojima and Renji have this like samurai battle with the swords, which was pretty wild. It ended pretty quickly, but it was cool to see.
It ended so quickly. His head got cut off.
Yeah. I like that though. It showed like this old dude is just like so much better than this other guy. And then Kay fights her way to V and Annie, and she takes a shot and saves Annie's life, and then Kate dies in Annie's arms to end the movie.
Yeah, so this final scene was extremely badass. Kate rolls in the front door.
Yeah.
And at first, the shot, we only see her. She's coming in, smoking a cigarette, got her sunglasses on, just rolling in.
And
then the...
What's the other thing in her hand? Boom Boom Lemon.
Oh, was she drinking the Boom Boom Lemon as she was walking in?
Yeah.
Anyway, she comes storming in, and then the... I guess it's the remaining members you would think of the Yakuza that were loyalist to Kojima at the time come rolling in behind her and start lighting the place up. So they eventually make their way up a couple floors, and then they get into these like super crazy hectic shootouts on multiple floors. There's bodies dying everywhere. And then towards the top floors, they break off into Kojima and the rest of his goons go off to find Renji, and Kate goes off to find Varric and Annie. And that's when the sword fight scene comes in, where this ultimate badass Kojima throws a sword on the ground, has Renji pick it up, cuts off a sling with his sword. They step into like this little like sword fighting arena that it looks like they build into their office building. And then bing, bang, boom, two moves. This old man who's in like his 70s just one swipes Renji and then just immediately goes straight and a clean cut straight off the head. This is just like, that was a big moment where it was like, wow, okay, this Kojima guy doesn't mess around. He really is like probably the most powerful man in the entire country. On the other hand, we have Kate comes really close to not making it, and she's really down to her last couple bullets here in her last moments, and she's able to make it through, breaks into the room where Varric is holding Annie at gunpoint. And at this point, they sit there, they talk out their feelings a little bit. Kate's upset. Varric's like, eh, it's business. Then they have like an old-fashioned Western draw-off, and they both end up shooting each other. But a note to that was that Kate shot Varric in the stomach. And we had a flashback in the movie at some point where Varric says, a shot to the stomach is always personal. When you shoot someone in the stomach, they know it was personal. And that's how Kate chose. I mean, we see her throughout the movie. She could put a bullet anywhere she wanted it and directly goes for her stomach. Varric passes into the chair and he passes away. And then we have the emotional scene really outside where Annie gets to say goodbye to Kate, and really, it's just a closing moment where it's like you said at the beginning, Greg, there was this automatic mother-daughter type connection between the two of them, and that's the final moment of Kate's life. She had a little bit of family.
Right, I really like the circular nature of the story, where we see that Kate and Annie's story were very similar, and the reason why she was so hell-bent on getting there to save Annie is because she didn't want her to end up like the same as her, as like a mindless assassin. So that was cool. Greg, any thoughts, final thoughts on the film?
Yeah, the last phrase that Kate says before she dies to Annie is, I know you. And I didn't know what that meant. Do you guys?
Yeah, so when they were in the taxi on the way to Kojima's house, like right before Kate ends up actually falling asleep. Annie was kind of saying, like, don't you want to know anything about me? Like, you only have so long to live. Like, you're not going to get to know anyone. I'm the last person you're going to know.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a callback to that, just that, you know, she really did give her last dying breaths to save this girl's life, is ultimately what it came down to.
Yeah, good call.
All right, any other closing thoughts now that we've talked through the whole film? Anything else to say?
My last closing thoughts, I think, to give this movie a lot of credit, there were several moments throughout the film that really reminded me of The Dark Knight, which to me is close to the top of, like, action movie, I guess the bar that you would set. And there were a lot of action scenes that were very similar to that throughout this. Now, the story I don't think holds up as high as that, obviously. But I think that the way that they did that office scene especially reminded me a lot of that final scene in The Dark Knight where he's fighting through the Joker's goons to get to the top of that building. And I just think throughout the movie, that you see those action tropes and those type of scenes that I think they did really well.
Yeah, and I think that's how this movie will be remembered. The action scenes were the highlight, the best part of the movie. The story was there, and it all kind of came together nicely, but it didn't blow you away.
Yeah, big, sorry, the Dark Knight thing. I think you're just getting confused by the elevation of the fight scenes. That's about it. On the next episode of Binged, The Guilty.